My name is Jeff Lerner, and I interview elite performers from a wide range of disciplines, entrepreneurs, athletes, celebrities, scientists, artists, and more. This is Unlock Your Potential. Welcome to another episode of Unlock Your Potential. Jeff Lerner, your host. Always so glad to be back with you, having amazing conversations with amazing human beings. Today, I am joined by my friend from down under, Mr. Ed Andrew. So I can tell you that Ed's bio will tell you that he's a 20-plus year entrepreneur. He's also an attorney and a high-performance coach in both life and business. He's kind of an elite-level business strategist, works with a lot of multi-million dollar entrepreneurs. He's worked with over 20,000 people in over 40 countries. But probably the best thing or most really significant thing I can say about Ed is that one of my closest friends, who's a very successful, multiple times successful founder and entrepreneur, basically, you know, introduced me to Ed and said, you know, this is the guy that I talk to when I don't have anyone else in my life that I can talk to about the biggest problems that I'm dealing with as an entrepreneur. And coming from him, that frankly means a lot more than any bio. So I wanted to introduce you that way. Ed, thanks for being who you are and thanks for being on the show.
Jeff, well, you know, thanks so much. And let's, you know, just on that point alone, I think how many conversations have we had with entrepreneurs, all different fields? And the one thing they say, particularly the men, say, I don't have anyone to discuss this with. I don't have anyone because my friends I can't talk to about. I can't talk to my wife or my kids. They don't understand it. And it's such a lonely place, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a really interesting, I think, starting point. I don't know the exact number, but I'm gonna go ahead and say that probably 60 to 80% of the audience of this show are entrepreneurs and or becoming entrepreneurs, you know, kind of like starting that phase of their life. Obviously, a lot of people come over from Entre Institute to follow the show. So I think that's something we can call out. Like if you're, especially if you're just getting started, like it is a lonely road, or I should say it can be a lonely road. And who is that person? Because you're right. Like with your spouse, you can really only have the challenging conversations to a degree because A, they're often not in the business, and B, you know, so a lot of times you don't actually want them to know how much you're struggling with something, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And then your friends, especially if your friends are not entrepreneurs, I mean, you might as well be speaking Russian in you know, Zambia or something. Like they just don't compute. Yeah. Or they think you're bragging.
Yeah. I mean, the friends thing's an interesting one because like if we reflect on our like successes and failures in life as a business owner, you're going to have plenty of both, right? It's definitely not a one-way street. And if you think about it, I remember this profoundly, right? I was sitting in a pub in Sydney on the water in the harbor, and I was about to jump on a plane to London, and I just sold my company about 6 months before, and I'd walk straight into another one. I mean, literally, I'd already been working 16-hour days before I sold it into the next one, which is a really not a good thing to do to start with. But anyway, I was sitting there, and you know, she was 6 months pregnant, and we had a 15-month-old, so really, 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 really young family. And they said, why are you going to, because moving back to the UK to build this business out there in Europe, they said, why are you doing this? You know, you are risking everything that you have and you don't need to work again, right? You're done. So why are you doing this? And I said,
how old were you, by the way?
I was 41, I guess, something like that. Okay. Like around for early 40s.
So it was like 5 years ago, right?
No, yeah, I wish. and I said, because I'm going to go and build, I was building a tech company. I'm going to build a $1 billion business. And that's what I want to do. It's not about building the $1 billion business. It's about the opportunity to go and build that. And I think this is what the world wants today. And I said, well, what happens if it doesn't go right? If it doesn't work out? I said, well, I'll just come back and that'll be it. And, you know, guess what? It didn't work out. And there's the interesting thing, and I think about that conversation a lot, Jeff. It's like, what part of me didn't listen to them? These are my, you know, great friends saying, why are you doing this? And I think that on reflection, if I had had a mentor at that time, because my father died when I was 30, so, and he was a banker, he was a businessman, he wasn't in my life, and and I was 10,000 miles away from home. I didn't have someone say to me, "Why are you doing this?" And even if I did, would I have been able to let the ego go at that stage of life? It's an interesting, like an interesting reflection.
So let me ask you this then, though, in that, because somebody. I mean, I'll just use myself as an example. I work more hours now than I have ever in my life, even though 5 years ago I sold my last business. And for like at least a few weeks, I was actually retired. Like I was like, this is cool. I don't have to. It's nice to not have to. And yet here I find myself 5 years later working more hours than I ever have in my life. And I love it. I wake up in the morning and I wake up at 4 and I like brush my teeth at roadrunner speed because I just want to get to it, right? The whole thing. And people, people ask me why, why are you doing this? And it's, to me, it's not the $1 billion company or the whatever, my particular target is, it's the only way I can figure out to become the person who's able to do the thing that I'm trying to do. The only way I can figure out to become that person is to actually do the thing that would require me to be that person. And so I'm curious for you, in looking at that experience, okay, so you struck out to become the person that could build the $1 billion tech company, and instead you became the person that could fail at building the $1 billion tech company. But that person's probably still a much more sophisticated, intelligent, experienced, evolved person than the person that had neither tried nor failed at building a $1 billion tech company. So was it,
I think,
how do you reflect on it in hindsight then?
It's one of those conundrums that is, I guess it's unique to the entrepreneurial spirit, but it's not necessarily a good one, right? Is that we talk about our spouses, like our wives. Is that would my wife have preferred me to have retired and lived in luxury rather than me to go and try and build a business 10,000 miles away? Absolutely. No question about that. And I think then that's sort of the biggest reflection on that, to answer that. And then what else will you have done? Well, I would have done something else, but I probably wouldn't have done it so immediately with such a young family. And now when I work with people, and the question is, and they're all high-flying, successful people. They don't really need money anymore. They're pretty much, the money conundrum's mainly solved for them. They just don't recognize that, right? So the question is, well, what do you want to achieve out of life for you and your family? Like, let's put that before we think about business. What are you trying to pull off for you and your family?
Right.
And if they're trying to pull off financial freedom, well, are we there, right? Are we there already? Are we trying to pull off mental clarity? Because often we go and build a business, we sell it, but we're still stuck in this loop. And the next one is likely not to be great because there's no mental clarity. There might be financial freedom, but actually is that not a great thing in some respects, because you're likely to dump money into a business because you have it without actually thinking through, should I do it?
Mm.
So I think the reflection there is when we ask the question, what is it we want to achieve out of life? And if I'd asked myself that question 10, 12 years ago, it would have been, well, financial security, which I had, but I want to help people. And so then the question would have been, well, how do you want to help them? Do you need to build this thing, which has got so many warning signs, it's going to require so much capital in a market which has never been done before? Like, there's a lot of risk in that. So is that the opportunity that is the right one for you to pursue? I think when we reflect, it sort of comes down to that. Because the reality is, I would have probably thought, no, I wouldn't have done it. But then on the other side of it, this is the unique thing about the entrepreneurial spirit, is that there are so many incredible learnings. I mean, I pitched to a room where there was over £1 billion of investment, sitting in front of me, and you got 8 minutes to tell them what you want. They could give you some of their money, It was an exciting, it was an incredible experience, very exciting, and has led me to all of the work that I've done since then. So from that point of view, it's just a a stepping stone, but, you know, could I have been better? Absolutely.
Well, so I think we're sort of highlighting the distinction between, call it, the entrepreneurial life and the non-trepreneurial life, which is, yeah, I hear what you're saying. Like, maybe in that particular case, that business, based on your priorities and your opportunities, or your priorities and your options at the time, that wasn't, in hindsight, the right one. But that's not because necessarily because you succeeded or failed at it. It's because, again, based on risk, based on priorities, based on your family, there were other things. But I think that it's still a reframing of the way we look at risk. And people, let's say people that are not entrepreneurs, hearing this conversation, are perhaps hearing it through the lens of risk, or hearing it through the filter of risk. Like, oh, well, of course that was a bad decision. He had financial security. Why would he take a big risk? But I want to suggest that the entrepreneurial way, and even going to the root of the word, by the way, the word entrepreneur is the French word for undertaker, but not like in America, an undertaker, or in English, an undertaker is like the Grim Reaper. Yeah. But it's in French, it's one who undertakes an adventure. So it actually, adventurer is a more literal translation to English for the word entrepreneur. And so in that sense, it's like, I you know, why do people climb mountains? Why do people seek adventure? It's not because, it's definitely not a risk calculation. You are obviously much safer not climbing a mountain. You do it because you want a life that you're not going to look back on with regret. And so to me, that's what being an entrepreneur is. But also, as a financial calculation, you mentioned that you had already solved the financial conundrum. You mentioned that you also work with other people who have solved the financial conundrum. How many people do you know who have truly solved the financial conundrum who were employees versus entrepreneurs?
Well, that's a good question. The only ones I know who are either doctors, lawyers, or bankers. Because if you look at the areas where you're going to make real money, which is comparable to owning a business, it is professional services, dentists, doctors, lawyers, surgeons, that type of thing.
But even in those, it's going to take a lot longer, especially lawyers and doctors, because you're going to spend the first 20 years paying off debt.
Yeah, it's going to take, particularly in North America, yeah, it's going to take a lot longer. So I think it's a really interesting question, because I also work and have worked with a lot of executives, as we, you know, because ultimately they're still in that high-flying sense. And I say to them, you know, I say, what do you want? And they say, well, you know, we want out of the rat race. We want to go and live in the country and have a farm, or, you know, just chill out. And I say, well, you know, you own four houses. Why are you not doing that? Because financially,
right,
they can do that, but their financial benchmark is their peers living in a city with mortgages and flash cars and all the rest of it, right? Because that's what they're competing against. That's what they're being judged against. But if you sold one of those, like you sold your principal one and kept the other three, and then moved to something and put a couple of $1 million in the bank and have your ranch, then you're getting mental freedom with financial freedom.
Yeah.
Right. But it's really hard for them to do that.
But again, you mentioned, so that's bankers, doctors, lawyers. Doctors and lawyers, I actually agree. If I look at my landscape of the world that I've navigated, I mean, I don't actually experience doctors and lawyers having that much freedom.
Oh, no, not mental freedom.
No. I mean, they can take a nice 2-week vacation every year with their family. But I mean, in that ultimate ability to be self-determined on a daily basis, go where I choose to go, help who I choose to help, do what I choose to do. Most doctors and lawyers don't have it either. I would actually argue, yeah, I think working in really high level, you know, corporate finance, investment banking, private equity, outside of those spheres, which is a pretty narrow sliver of society, basically entrepreneurship is where all the opportunity is.
Yeah, but there's a little marker on it, which is really interesting. And I find this mindset really interesting, because you and I both love looking at, you know, how human behavior works and psychology, and how we... I met this lady who's an incredible lady, and she is a Navy captain. So she's in the Australian Navy. She was, and she's also Muslim, so she was the first woman of faith to reach captain, which is like a, you know, it's one under a star rank in the Navy, wearing a hijab, right? So incredible. And that woman, so incredible difficulty in reaching that. And I think if I'm right, she's the only one in any Western defense force to have reached that rank of faith, right? However, here's the thing, it's the interesting thing. She had accumulated $10 million worth of real estate assets by the time she retired. And if you look at what Grant Cardone says, like 10 million is your benchemark number. That's what he wants you to
get. Yeah, I have a chapter in my book that says 10 million is the new million, and I get hate mail about it all the time.
And she was doing that off a military salary, which are not known to be very high.
Right.
Because she had been so strategic about every dollar that she owned. She didn't live a lavish lifestyle. You know, the kids went to school, they all had cars, but it wasn't, there was no luxury being spent or wasted, put it that way. So here's someone who had a salary in not a great paying industry who had accumulated $10 million worth of real estate assets. So I think there's a lesson in there for those people who may be listening to the show who are not entrepreneurs as to how do I go and build real wealth if I don't run a business? And there are ways, but she was doing it since she was 18. That's the difference.
Well, yeah, I totally agree. And it's funny because this is like the conversation inside of Entra, my education platform, where we're always trying to, you know, students come in and they typically think like, okay, I want to make money. I want to make more money. I want to quit my job. It's usually like a financial pain point in their life. And then they connect the dot of like, oh, I should start a business, but I want more flexibility and less risk than I associate with a traditional business of like, I don't know, owning a hot dog stand or a car, you know, car wash or something. So I want an online business. That people think, oh, an online business, that'll be less risk, more flexibility. And so then, and it's sort of, that's sort of like an oversimplified mindset of like, I need more money, I need more flexibility, I should start an online business, right? And so we actually take the time to unpack that conversation. And we have a concept that we call a success vehicle, which is for a lot of people likely will be a business, right? But your success vehicle, or we sometimes also call it a surplus vehicle, is that like basically we teach that you, and this is, you know, I would say this to virtually anybody in the audience listening this right now, you have to identify something in your life that over a reasonably short period of time, like within, let's say a matter of a few years, maybe 5 years, probably not 10, you can accumulate sufficient leverage to like lever up the value of your time and your earning potential to create true surplus, because the average raise, at least in the United States, is 2.3% a year, and the long-term inflation rate is 3.3% a year. So working a job, by definition, you get over the course of a 40-year career, you actually lose whatever income salary you started out at over the course of the average 40-year career. You have 49% less purchasing power after 40 years than you did the first year you entered the workforce, based on the difference between the average raise and the long-term rate of inflation, where you're actually losing buying power over time. So like, if you don't find some success vehicle, and so in the example you described, investing her extra income in real estate, that was her success vehicle. And there's four income, as a practical matter, there's only four ways you can make money in this world. You can make it as an employee. You can make it as some kind of a contractor trading time or services for money on a limited basis. You can be a true business owner, or you can be an investor. And so the way we teach it is you got to figure out within those four income types, what am I going to identify as my success vehicle, and how am I going to get to surplus so that I can unlock an opportunity for wealth? Anyway, so that was kind of a long explanation, but that's how we view the world. And I think you make a really good point, which is it's not limited to traditional business ownership.
No, and it's not linear. And I think one of the, as you highlighted there, is that one of the problems we get in life is we get into this very binary linear mindset of you have to do this or that, like, you know, job, education, career, mortgage, da-da-da. It's like, it's very linear.
Yeah.
But it doesn't work like that. It doesn't work like that. And, you know, you can see people. I remember working with someone who was, you know, making several million a year, earning several million a year, you know, corporate executive, lost their job because, you know, they're not secure at that level.
Right. Right. Yeah, new CEO, usually the whole C-suite, the whole executive team gets axed.
You got 3 years, right? Yeah. In this day and age, 3 years. Maybe a CEO, hopefully you've got longer because the impact in 3 years is really hard. But the reality is, you said, you know, I need to get another gig paying X, Y, and Z. You know, a few hundred thousand, half a million, a million a year. I said, do you know how much you spend a month? And he said, no. I said, so suggest you sit down with your wife and figure out how much your bills are a month. Had no idea. Mm-hmm. And this is where I think that, you know, a good entrepreneur, one who is likely to have more success than another, understands financial literacy. We take risk, okay? There's risk. We understand that. But in terms of when you're running a business, you know what comes in and what goes out. If it doesn't come in, you can't spend it.
Right.
Right. If you're making $1 million a year or $2 million a year in your, or half a million in your corporate job, you're probably spending far more money than you need to because you're wasting it.
Yeah, right? I think this is why it actually, I mean, we started this conversation by talking about mentorship and really who are your friends? Who do you talk to about these things?
Yeah.
I think this is one of the reasons it's so important to actually have an entrepreneurial circle that you run with, because when you hang around entrepreneurs, well, I'm saying if you're an entrepreneur, hang out with, you know, have other entrepreneurs. You know, if you're a real estate investor, have other real estate investors in your life, right? But like when you're with entrepreneurs, like one of the things I say all the time, and this credit to, this is an Alex Hormozi soundbite, is like, wealth is not a number. Wealth is a ratio. It's a ratio of income to expenses. That's all wealth is. And you say that to an entrepreneur and they're like, hell yeah, and they get excited. Like you tell an entrepreneur, yo, I just moved into a smaller apartment. I just cut my overhead by $500 a month. And they're going, way to go, man. You just got wealthier because you shrunk the denominator of your ratio. You hang out with the average person and they're like, oh, you know, must be hard, like, well, times must be tough or something. They're not like happy for you.
Yeah. And I think it's a really interesting point because, you know, when I was 30, I've had many different options to do different things in life, right? But when I was 30, my father died, and, you know, he died he was only a year older than me now, which is quite frightening, really. Mm. And I very nearly went into real estate. It's like, you know, I don't really need to do very much, but I am interested in real estate. I'd already done a couple of properties already. I had a friend who is ex-corporate. He's a yogi. He literally has a yoga retreat in Thailand, and he goes to London, and he develops, you know, multi-million dollar properties on his own with his sledgehammer, does the painting, drives around in a car, which you wouldn't even want to steal, you know. but he's accumulating wealth because he knows how to do it. But ultimately, he's a yogi, right? He's doing it because he knows how to make money and he can, so he does it. But I think, you know, at that stage, when you're beginning to accumulate assets, if you are, then it would make more sense, if you don't have a family, that you live in the smallest property and you rent out the biggest properties, not the other way around, because that's what you want to do. You don't need to live in a four-bedroom house if you're on your own with your boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever. You want a one-bedroom apartment. That's it. And I think it takes a certain mindset to figure out, because that's where ego comes in, right? Look at what I have, as opposed to, I don't care what anyone thinks what I have. I'm doing this because I'm making a plan for the future.
Yeah. Yeah, my son, I'll tell you about my son. He's 19 years old, and he actually works for Entra, for my business. He's on our phone sales team. He also works on our events team. And we have he's like very entrepreneurial. And so we have a kind of a plan we're evolving right now where, you know, he works, he lives at home, he's saving up his money. And once he gets to a certain amount of savings, we're going to go out and acquire a property, a single family residence with a garage apartment,
Yep.
So that he can move out into the garage apartment and then rent out the single family residence. And his only goal is to try to find a property that's decent to live in, has a decent garage apartment that he can rent out to at least cover the majority of his, you know, principal and interest on the mortgage and the taxes and the insurance.
Yeah.
And basically just try to get his rent covered and then build equity. And that's his play. And he's like, and he's at an age where, frankly, his friends are getting their first jobs and, you know, they're spending it on souping up their cars and doing, you know, muffler deletes and, you know, buying $200 sneakers and trying to look flashy for their girlfriends or whatever. And I just like, we keep coming back. He keeps coming back to center of like, no, I want to play the long game. I don't want to be the typical 19-year-old. I want to make decisions right now in acknowledgement of the 40 and 50-year-old version of me. I want to be thinking about that guy. And well, I'm like, yes.
That's very switched on, but that comes down to parent. I mean, it comes down to a mindset and also parenting. I mean, if you come from nothing, there are many people I know, entrepreneurs, who literally come from nothing. I mean, incredible poverty, and that's driven them for a very long time. But that drive also has got them into trouble later. But that's a slightly different story. But in order to be exposed to that, you've got to see either something you hate so much you want to get away from it, or you see something that's the life I want to live. And that comes from the people. But we go back to the conversation of who's around you. Like you are,
right. You've
been in that space your entire life. You've witnessed extreme wealth and you've witnessed nothing, right?
Yeah, I was a jazz musician for 10 years. I definitely know how to be poor.
You know, and it's, look, you can have a lot of fun being a jazz musician, but it's not fun to be poor, right?
Right.
It's not a good place to be. So he witnesses that. But you could have two kids, one who sees that and takes that path and the other one who doesn't. It's interesting as to what connection they make. And so, you know, when we're trying to work with, you know, one of the people I was working with, he had a complete disconnection with his son because the father came out of absolute poverty. And still the only one, I think, in the family who's actually got a degree ever. And he's now got 5 and he's a professor and he's written a book and all these other things. But he had this disconnection with his son because the son wanted to skip out of college and he couldn't understand why he'd want to do that. It's like, this is the only opportunity. But the thing is, the son had been brought up with wealth and privilege.
Right.
He always had a roof over his head, always had food. The father hadn't. So the father's still living the life he'd experienced when he was 16, 15, 14. The kids had never seen that.
Yeah. So I think this is a really good segue. And first of all, I took the implied compliment about my parenting. I appreciate it. But it's a proud parenting moment. It's like, awesome. Yeah. My son's been paying attention. This is amazing. But let's kind of segue here into a lot of the work you do. Like the first time you and I met, it was not, hey, come be on my podcast. We actually decided to have each other on our podcast because we had this really good conversation and we're like, we should, you know, how can we become better friends? I don't know. Let's be on each other's podcasts and have more time to talk and hang out. Right. But that original conversation is kind of what I want to transition to here, because I think it ties in with what you're talking about, where I know you do a lot of work around the psychology, the mindset, even the trauma, the growth of the entrepreneur. And I'm wondering if we can kind of just switch into that territory, because if I really think about how best to serve our audience here, I mean, you're totally right. Like, you know, we enter into the workforce basically as a product of our juvenile conditioning. Mm-hmm. And then we figure out pretty quick, I think most people figure out pretty quickly, huh? The workforce is not set up for my abundance.
Yeah.
It is set up to extract my time and my energy and my production for someone else's abundance.
Yeah.
And then we have to try to wrestle with our demons and our fears and our risk tolerance and our traumas and our insecurities. And I'm wondering if you could kind of maybe dive into that, like speaking to the audience, you know, do you have any sort of general theories of how people can maybe self-assess or how people can maybe prepare themselves to make an entrepreneurial pivot, or maybe just how you help people reconcile the shit they're trying to work through and cast off so that they can break through? Because usually, I mean, every entrepreneur eventually, my experience, tends to run into a ceiling based on their past experience.
The dog wants to get out. Give me 2 seconds. So I'm going to come hang on. Yeah, that's all I got to do is open the door.
Yeah, first things first, of course.
I knew this was going to happen. It's like my wife and daughters are out with their horses, and I've got the dogs, and they're going to be wanting to get in and out of the office. They want to be here. They don't want to be here. But let me start by framing that question. It's a great question. Is that in my experience, first of all, like a woman's mind, a young woman's mind, is fully formed prefrontal cortex by the age of 18. So neurologically, physically, anatomically, biologically, fully formed, fully developed being at 18. A man, from what I understand by neuroscience, is 26, 27. Like it's a full nearly 10 years later.
And the last thing to click in is the ability to forecast long-term consequences.
Yeah. And so what we see is we're talking about, you know, people moving from, say, corporate to entrepreneurship, is we see young women, some do it at 16, 17, 18, but there's a huge shift by the time they get to about 26, 28, is to, okay, there may be a biological reason for thinking, you know, my career might have an ending here and I come back to it later. I think that's dynamics changing a lot now anyway. But there's a question of, if I sit here any longer, I'm never going to get out. I'm never going to do the things I want to do. So their thoughts about building a business come generally earlier than men's. Men's tends to come in like 28 to 32, but they're beginning to think about that and career. But with men, if they skip that, they miss it. The chances are they're not going to see that again until 40s or maybe even 50s.
Yeah, midlife crisis, really.
It's then they come back to it. And what we see, and you know, you're talking about, you know, childhood, you know, forming our thoughts and our patterns in life, is what we see is that you can be a phenomenally successful entrepreneur for maybe 10 or 20 years and build a very successful, financially profitable business with a lot of trauma. Like, you can do that. The problem is that if you push that down so hard, it will come and get you. And it's going to generally come and get you at the time when you can't handle it. So when your business is under stress, maybe you're getting to a stage where, you know, your body's breaking down a little bit more because you're boozing too much, or maybe you're taking recreational drugs because you're not as happy as you think you are. Your relationships are beginning to break down. And then guess what happens? That trauma surfaces because you're in this depleted state and you've got no idea what to do with it.
And to be clear, growing a business will test you. Like, you will get to a point where you are tested. Like, it's almost without fail. I don't know anybody, whether they succeeded at building a business or they failed at building a business. Either way, they got their ass kicked at building a business.
And that's going to happen to you many times in the iteration of, even if you only have one business in your life. Yeah. And the thing is, if you can't handle that situation, you don't have the resilience or the awareness to say, I need help, right? Because what happens is when you start chasing, we set up a business and whether it's you're doing it at 20 or 30 or 40, it doesn't really matter. We have a mission, we have an outcome. Most of us have achieved that outcome within the first 6 to 8 years of building the business, right? And then what we forget to do is we forget to set the next one. So we're actually pursuing a goal we've already accomplished. Then we don't know what we're pursuing anymore. Like, why am I doing it? I don't know why I'm doing it. So they then say, well, I want to sell my business because I've had enough of it. Well, actually, you probably haven't had enough of the business. What you're saying is you have no more creativity in your business. Mm-hmm. The business is no longer providing you with the fulfillment that you set out to achieve. Like, and so then it's unpacking the language they use, because, you know, strategy, tactics, levers in business for me is pretty simple. Like, I can look at most business and go, this is where the little weaknesses are. This is where the holes are. When you look at it objectively, and then looking at them and saying, well, do you know the language you're using about your business yourself? The patterns that you have. And when we get into that, it's generally because they've either had a failed business before, or they've witnessed mom or dad saying you're not good enough, or you'll never be a failure, or do this or do that. Or there's a fear in there. There's an innate fear, which we all have as humans. Every single one of us has them. But unless we lean into that and really understand the reason why the business isn't working is probably not so much to do with the business and the market. It's actually about me and my governorship of my business.
Mm-hmm.
That's challenging, Jeff. That's confronting, because they are having to accept that actually the way that they are running the business, the way that they run their life, is actually the one that's causing the problem in the business.
Yeah, you mentioned that 6 to 8 year time frame. I got to share. I mean, I have lived in such a profound way what you're saying. You know, first of all, even as a messed up, you know, psychologically conflicted, messy human, you can build a successful business. I did it in my 30s. I built a digital agency, is what comes to mind. And actually, frankly, even the business I built before that, it actually had kind of followed the same template. But you know, over almost it was in my sixth year is when I was like, I'm done with this. I'm sick of it. I want to sell it. Like exactly like you said. But when I decided I wanted to sell it and it was time to get it like valued and they, you know, they did their due diligence and they looked under every rock, there were major systemic dysfunctions in the business that were basically a reflection of me. Like it was little inattentions to detail that had resulted in, you know, they're like, I mean, I now have the benefit of hindsight. Like I can see how certain KPIs, like churn in particular in that business, our churn rate directly correlated to minor detail inattentions that were reflective of minor detail inattentions in my own life, because I built my business like I built my life. And when it came time to sell the business, it probably cost me, like I sold the business for $2 million. I probably should have sold the business for between 10 and 20.
Yeah, there you go.
But because I hadn't actually dealt with some of my stuff, I got a massive haircut on the value of the business. And then now in my new business, I went, I'm not going to do that again. I'm going to take on my stuff and I'm going to have some of it was hard conversations with my wife. It was unpacking the past. It was making amends for transgressions. It was like stuff I had to deal with. And I see now that this business is way more successful than the last one, because I'm just a kind of a clearer person now. It's crazy.
And I think that that's wonderful that you've learned those lessons. The thing is, I was talking to someone last week, one of my clients, and she said, you know, I've changed my patterns. It's like, you haven't changed your patterns in 3 weeks. I can promise you that much. No, I'm good. It's like, no, it's you telling yourself you have, but everything I'm hearing is exactly the same. And I think one of the challenges to our ego, right, is that as we go through life and we learn the lessons, is we've got to keep learning, because otherwise our ego is going to put us back on our butt again. Like that's the thing. It's like there's always the next level of awareness to get to. And I think one of the things you say really interestingly about your churn rate, when we build metrics, like just on a little business technique at the moment, for your guests, metrics are so critical, because we want to have 6 to 12 metrics in our business, the top line metrics that we know of every day of the week, every hour of the day, mm-hmm. because that defines success or failure. And one of the things which is most confronting is to put a metric in there which we don't want to see, right? Because the metrics we don't want to see govern, again, risk, success, and failure. And it's building them, saying, no, rather than saying, I know that it's always going to be fine, saying, no, let's put it in there. Because if we can't pull that lever, everything else doesn't work. So I think, you know, there are technical lessons in there for how we build our business, but also based on our ego. And the interesting thing is, and I was talking to our friend who introduced us about the inverse correlation between how quickly you recover to how far down you are the track of your trauma, and then also how much awareness and introspection you're able to give it in the period of time. Because if you've gone 20 years building a business, running from something, and done it very successfully, you've never had any conversation about spirit or yourself or what it is that, you know, is there anything greater on this planet than just you, shall we say, or universe, faith, religion, whatever you want to call it, doesn't really matter. Confronting that at that stage is not impossible, but it's very challenging because you've got to do a lifetime's work in a short space of time to solve the problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's probably going to have a lot more disruptive consequence.
Yeah.
And if you've done it sooner.
And that's one of the things. And one of the things that I think is challenging and is really important to be aware of is when you're going through that level of transformation, even if you can do it quickly, is when your spouse, your friends, your family see you do that, they actually normally push away from it really hard because they say, you're changing and I don't like it. And there's a lot of friction in that change. And so the most important lesson there, I feel, is that we have to communicate that really clearly. And it goes back to the point you said earlier, which is we don't really want to tell our spouses what's going on because sometimes they don't want to know. They shouldn't know. But on the other hand, when you're actually trying to make these changes, it's so important that we communicate that and say, listen, I'm actually doing this for myself. And if I get this right, it's going to benefit you and the children and our friends and everybody else. But I am doing it for me. So you're, what you're witnessing is a change, but it's a change which I have to make. And when you can have that conversation, and you do that on a neutral space, you don't do it at home, you go off and go for a walk or you go to a restaurant, you go to somewhere where there's no interference in that conversation, then you still have to go through it. But at least they have an idea as to what you're doing so you don't get that pushback from, I don't like it.
Yeah, but first of all, I think this is actually a really good opportunity for if anybody's seeing this on YouTube. I know a lot of people listen to this on the podcast platforms, but if you're seeing a video of this, you might be looking at my background wondering, why isn't Jeff in the usual Unlock Your Potential studio? And for that matter, it kind of looks like, I don't know, did his wife kick him out or something? He looks like he's not, you know, living in the nicest spot. There's a bed in the background. I got a suitcase, my protein powder on the bed. So I'm at a summer camp, as I mentioned this to you, Ed. And this is a camp that our, you know, entrepreneurial education platform, Entre, we use this camp 10 months out of the year. We bring entrepreneurs to camp to do personal development because the foundation of our work is that entrepreneurship is actually, and entrepreneurship and personal development are really two lanes on the same road. Mm. And if you try to do one without the other, and this is the exact conversation we're having, like it might work for a while. Like you can fool a lot of people for a long time, including yourself. But eventually, if you haven't done the work on yourself, it's going to bite you somehow in the business. And the thing that I think really impacted me, and I took this from my last experience, you know, I've had multiple businesses and a few, you know, so many have failed. You only need one to be successful and change your whole life. I've had a few, which has been really great, but they've all had a lot less. Even the successful ones were less successful than they could have been, but they keep getting more successful because I keep getting a little less unhealthy. And so it's like, but that's because I finally made that connection, right? And so we just tell people on day one, look, if you're going to sign up to become an entrepreneur, go ahead and sign up to start working on yourself. But you're right. You end up having conversations with, and I'm at a camp. There's, you know, dozens of people out there doing personal development work that I, just an hour ago, I was out there with them, right? Because I love it. I love the energy. I love to be around it. But I mean, there's like a, you know, a guy out there, for example, he quit smoking because he realized he enrolled in our viewpoint that if I can't maintain a discipline and build a delayed gratification muscle or reduce my need for escapism or confront the trauma is the void that I'm trying to fill with this behavior, like whatever, I don't know the mechanics of smoking for him, but he figured out if I can't stop doing this, I won't be successful at building a business. And so for him, his first 30 days as an entrepreneur had nothing to do with being an entrepreneur. It was only proving to himself that he could not smoke a cigarette.
Hey there, real quick. I just wanted to let you know, I have been concentrating a lot lately on providing tons of value to my text message community. This could be random thoughts. This could be letting you be the first to know about an event I'm planning or a special I'm running or a free training I'm hosting. Anyway, just shoot me a text to get subscribed. The number is 702-996-3926. Thanks so much. Let's get back to the podcast.
To be honest, this is the work that we love, right?
And this is why I love it so much. Yeah, exactly. You improve people's whole lives, not just their bank accounts.
Well, you know, the business is a consequence of them. A successful business is the consequence of them getting their stuff together. Like the if we want to call it self-mastery, know thyself, know yourself, it is more important for you to learn that skill than it is to learn any skills about business ownership. Because when you acquire those skills, A, they're permanent. They stay with you for life. You've got to keep practicing, but they stay with you for life. What it does is it gives you abundance. And the true meaning of abundance is not, I can have a bit of this and a bit of this and a bit of that. Is you get health, wealth, and relationships. Yes, we're going to have challenges, but it means that we open ourselves up to opportunity, right? And we protect ourselves from risk. So the concept that we're saying is if you understand and you learn these skills before you go into business or as you're going to business, you know, ultimately we're not going to see the type of egotistical corporate leadership that we see. We're not going to see the fraud and corruption in businesses that we see. We're not going to see so many, or hopefully not so many, fly-by-night, flash in the pan, buy this product, you know, make a quick buck and get out before anyone realizes who you are. You're actually going to build sustainable, profitable businesses, and you're going to look after your people. Because ultimately, if you don't look after your people, you don't have a business anyway. Like, you know, the amount of work which goes into replacing people all the time if you treat them badly, is the amount of energy is just too much. You may as well, you know, you can do so much more by being good than you can by being poorly behaved. And I think, you know, and it's an interesting place for us, because this is sort of where we started talking, you know, a couple of months ago. Why is it that it's not taught so more widely, right? And what is the right place for that? Like, how do we go about encouraging people to self-leadership as business owners, as entrepreneurs, which are just as important skills as metrics, sales, marketing, product development, customer service. It's like, why is this not so? More and more people are beginning to understand.
Let me be clear. I'm glad it's not taught, because Entre Institute's white space in the market was to start teaching it. So I'm kind of grateful, I guess, but I take your point for sure. Yeah.
And you know, when we look at, you know, you mentioned Hormozi, and you know, there's a lot of noise in the market. Some of which is good and some of which is bad. But for a young entrepreneur or a new entrepreneur, it's really hard to figure out, what am I trying to learn? What skill am I trying to learn? Because everything has been thrown at them about wealth, 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 wealth. You know, how you make 100 grand by doing X in 30 days. It's like, it's not real. These people who have done it have probably spent three, five years learning their trade in something else before they've been able to pull that lever.
Right.
Right. And when we look at, if I look at, you know, the world of online education, which of course is, you know, you're in at the moment, is so many of your competitors don't even teach business skills, Jeff. They don't actually teach the skill of running a business. They teach a skill, which is how to sell a book online or do a course online. But there is no, what do you actually need to do to have a 5 or 10 year business?
Yeah, it's like, it'd be like teaching how to build a house by only talking about installing windows.
Yeah.
Like, we teach you how to, you're going to build this amazing house and we're just going to teach you how to install the windows. And like, don't worry, the rest of it, you know, just kind of fits around the windows.
Yeah. Or we're going to teach you a really high-tech smart house, but we're not going to tell you any of how the software works or how any of the buttons work. So you're going to have it, but it's just like, it's an empty shell.
Yeah. You make a really good point. I mean, people are so drawn to the financial piece. I mean, this is the bane of my existence, right? Is like, I was literally ranting about this with our marketing team this morning. Is like, I've tried so many different angles. I talk about, you know, developing skills that help you grow a successful business. They also help you in your relationships with your family, and they help you, you know, navigate society. I've talked about, you know, the discipline of being a successful business owner and how it can, you know, finally unlock your ability to get in the shape that you want, or quit smoking or quit drinking. And it, like, at the end of the day, always the only ads that actually convert are the ones that bring it back around to making money. And I get it. But like, that is actually the lagging indicator of who you've become to build what you've built. And I get, you know, I'm not going to change how people respond to ads, certainly not through this conversation, but I do hope for the audience listening, to your point, we can just once and for all dispense with the whole, like, how to make 10 grand in 90 days. Like, that is all bullshit. It's all bullshit. And it's worse than bullshit, because it's a distraction and a destruction from what's real.
Yeah, and I think, you know, here's an interesting thing. This is, and this is to our friend, right, who we're talking about. And he has this concept of this thing called manufactured fame. But manufactured fame in his world as a marketer doesn't mean 10 grand in 90 days. It means through ad spend, you can develop a credibility that you may not, you might have the skills and the nous, but you just may, no one knows who you are, right? That's the difference between making a ton of money and not making a ton of money. In this world is who you are. So we talk about manufactured fame, how you use ads to create this sense of drama around you. But the interesting thing is, and he and I have had these conversations, you know, both ways so many times, is that when I look at, and I've broken this down, I've done the research, if we look at the type of levers you have to pull in ads, if you want to sell anything to do with spirituality, should we say, or self-awareness, transformation, personal development, you can't do it with ads unless it is hypnotherapy, or there's got to be some certification which has some tangible outcome, like learn hypnotherapy, and then you can, you know, have clients and teach them that. So that's tangible. Tony Robbins is got away with it, but he was doing infomercials 30 years ago, but they're on business. Like, Tony Robbins sells business skills. He understands that in order for us to achieve, we have to understand our psyche, but he's selling business skills. No one else could go and do, you know, date with destiny and be successful. This is not going to happen in this world because it's too vague, right? It's incredibly. So anything to do with spirit and personal development doesn't sell through ads unless it has a tangible outcome. Because it's too vague. Therefore, everything else is health, wealth, beauty. Like, how do we look better? How do we make more money? And even if we look at the pain and the desire, if we look at the three things which sinks a business risk, they're operational, they're financial, they're reputational. Same as us. It's just operational for us is health. We can't sell risk either, because most people don't buy risk. They buy benefit, which is, if you want to have, you know, grow a $10 million business, this is what you need to do. The thing is, though, here's the other thing, is that do people think long-term enough to think, yes, I want to know the skills of a $10 million business? No. And the research says, and this is a really interesting thing, right? The reason why most of these ads running for online education is how to make $100,000 is because there was a bit of research, and I can't remember where it came from, so unfortunately I can't give you the source, but it was that the most people in the US want to see $120,000 a year as an income they want is the safe income. Hence why everything is your first 10K, get to naught to 10K or get to naught to 100 grand, because that is what the vast majority of people want to earn. That is not abundance.
Yeah. That's, so I'm glad you brought that up, okay, because we're going to kill a sacred cow here. So this in 2000, I mean, a lot of this ethos around 100 grand a year, like the idea of six figures or 10 grand a month, like you said, that's the unlock for like this joyous life. It's promulgated in TV shows. I was literally I have a presentation I'm working on right now where I have an episode of Orange is the New Black where Piper is telling her friend in jail that like about this study from 2009 that said that happiness peaks at $75,000 a year, that was done by this Princeton psychologist and economist. Angus Deaton and Daniel Kahneman are the Princeton academics that did it. One's an economist, one's a psychologist. And they published this thing that basically says happiness peaks at $75,000 a year, which in today's dollars is a little over $100,000 a year, right? Yeah. And it's a total lie. It's total bullshit. If you actually go read the research, they were asking two types of questions. One of the questions was around mood stability. It was basically like, in the last 24 hours, have you experienced happiness? Have you experienced sadness? Have you experienced anxiety? Have you experienced elation, right? And they're basically gauging mood volatility and correlating it to stress and saying, well, once you get above, you know, let's say in inflation adjusted dollars now, once you get above $100,000 a year, more money no longer correlates to less stress and therefore a more stable mood. That's the only conclusion. Now, there's a whole other set of questions. And by the way, there's a lot more research on this type of questioning that has validated through what they call the life satisfaction index.
Yeah.
Which basically says, describe your ideal life and then rate your current life in comparison to the life that you would desire to have. And there is a direct and uncapped correlation between money and happiness, or money and life satisfaction. More money, more life satisfaction. If you have $1 billion and I give you another $1 billion, you just got more satisfied with your life. Like, it never caps. And society has taken this narrow conclusion and abstracted it out to be the entirety of the conclusion, when in fact, that's only talking about one little thing. And the actual research shows money directly correlates to life satisfaction in an unlimited way. And I'm like on this mission to go recapture the narrative, because you have the personal development / metaphysics industry telling people that money doesn't matter. All you need is to like open up your pineal gland or whatever. And then you have the business industry oversimplifying it and making it all about money, 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 but not correlating it to the larger purpose and life satisfaction. And that's why I'm trying to create an integrated conversation that says, like, how you do one thing is how you do everything. Get excellent physically, personally, professionally, and purposefully, and go live an amazing life. But it's also going to be the hardest work you ever do.
That's why I call my program The Business of Life.
So let's talk about your program. Let's talk about your program.
But it's just the reason I call that is because they're not separated. This notion of duality is what has got us so, it's post-industrial revolution. Pre-industrial revolution, we used our hands. We were valued for what we could create, right?
Right.
Not about money. Industrial revolution, the world to automation, mechanization. It's about no longer creativity. We don't use our hands. We become disconnected from our heart because it's now irrelevant. We're only paid for what we think. Right? That's it. Paid for what you think. Everything else is, when I first went to work, literally they would say, leave your emotions at the door. They're irrelevant. Like, seriously. And we're not going to go into the research as to what this is called humanity. But anyway, but the point being is you're paid to think. So there's a disconnection to heart. And if you disconnect from heart, you disconnect to source, faith, religion, spirituality, universe, whatever you want to call it. And if there's no integration between the two, you only live in this energy from the prefrontal cortex, which will burn out.
Yeah.
Right? If you don't practice gratitude or breath work or meditation, whatever you want to do, the heart has 10,000 chemical markers the brain does not have. It has memories and cells the brain does not have. You are not accessing your complete human operating system if you only operate from this space, because it has a limited capacity.
Talk a little more about that research. I'm familiar with what you're referring to, but about how the heart has a nervous, like a memory, like neurons and like memories, and like essentially it's got its own little mini nervous system.
So the research I'm familiar with came out of HeartMath, the HeartMath Institute.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Which you're familiar with them as well. Yeah. And then, of course, you've got Joe Dispenza, Bruce Lipton, Greg Braden, all talking about neuroscience and our connection to the universe and quantum healing and all of these type of dynamics. But basically, it's really quite simple. Like, we're an animal. We're a sentient being. You don't get a dog or a cow or an elephant only living in its brain, because it will die very quickly, right? we forget that we're part of that cycle, right? So we're sentient, which means we think, we see, we smell, we feel, right? So when I talk to people, I say, I don't want to know what you think. I want to know how you feel about that. And I go, oh, feel? Okay. Because that's when we see the difference between a mistruth, which is the words that we say, because that's truth. What comes out of our mouth is true. The mistruth is whether our body is in alignment with those words. That's how we can pick up and say, I don't believe that. That's not true. I don't believe you believe that.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's a moment of reflection. But you don't get that reflection from the logical, analytical mind. This mind is designed for strategies, designed for math, 2 + 2. It's not designed for, how do I feel about this situation? It's not designed for observation. It's not designed for reflection. It's not designed for abundance. Opportunity abundance comes from the ability to see everything. So what we do is we expand the mind to every possibility. Then we can laser focus onto the one that we want, but we have a peripheral vision. And the peripheral vision tells us, well, there's something over here. There's a little red flag over here, or there's another opportunity here. Can I bring that in? Do I have time and space, energy, resources for that or not? Because otherwise you become back into this binary space, this linear space. And if you do that, you miss everything else around you. And you don't get that by staying in your cranial thinking mind. You only get that by integrating heart, mind, body, soul, the whole thing, the human experience.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, the biggest place that I've experienced this shift in business, other than just how I feel, like I like the way I feel a lot better when I'm living a more integrated, aligned existence, obviously. But the biggest impact I've seen in terms of, let's call it, external reinforcement that something is different because the world around me is behaving differently because I'm showing up differently, yeah, is in my leadership of and interactions with people.
Yeah.
Because when you're aligned, when you, and this has been a lot of therapy and a lot of struggle and a lot of work, thousands of hours for me. I'm not saying like, oh, it came by any of this, and it's always a work in progress. But I mean, I basically spend most of my time now doing some sort of personal development and or leadership development work on myself and or for others. And all, what I feel happening is the more aligned I get, the more ruthlessly exacting standards I hold myself to in terms of every utterance out of my mouth, literally the words I choose, the inflection I choose, the volume I choose, the energy I choose in the way I communicate totally aligns with head and heart. And the more I heal and train my nervous system to be regulated and come in at a vibrational frequency that doesn't feel chaotic or dangerous for people. Like, I mean, this, call it like super woo-woo way of being, right? People respond so differently that like it's so much easier to lead and to attract customers and to close sales and get your team to do what you want. Like, it's amazing.
There's a really simple exercise, and I was taught this by my Chinese energy master, right? When I was sick and he was helping me repair my body and my spirit. And it's a beautiful exercise, but he says, it doesn't matter when you do this, any time of the day, apologize to the people that you've hurt. And I say, I apologize to, say I'd had a bad thought about Jeff. I'd say, I apologize to Jeff unconditionally, unequivocally for any hurt, loss, or damage that I've caused you. And there's no but. There's no equivocation at the end of it. And I do that many, many times, right? If I've had a bad thought, sometimes people actually verbalize it. Most of the time it's mental. Sometimes people actually write a letter. Then the flip side of that is to congratulate ourselves for a good deed that we did that day. Now, at the beginning, 90% of our time will be apologizing to the person you were nasty to when you were 12 on the school playground or whoever it happens to be, right?
Right.
When I say this to people, and particularly when they're having an intense confrontation energetically with someone at the moment, I say, what normally happens is you get one of two things. Is you walk back into that room, that person either fires up really quickly at you because they notice a change, right? They notice that you have become at peace with what happened, and they don't like that. Or most often, is they look at you slightly differently and they behave differently because there's no longer confrontation. So when you talk about how do we do this in business, well, imagine you've got someone that is on your case because something's gone wrong, right? You haven't delivered them the service you thought you would be able to give them. They're really upset about that. Now, you're anticipating an attack. And if you sit there and you let them talk and you're calm and you say, look, totally our fault, full accountability. What can we do to help you? In that tone, what can we do to help you? I'm sorry. It's very hard for them to continue venting for very long. So guess what happens? You get a totally different outcome. I was talking to a client who, you know, has got a $40 million business, and he had to deal with some corporate execs who were really on his case, and he was going to fire up. I said, just listen to them. Just listen. Listen. Say nothing. Right? Do your meditation before. Do your breath work before. And then say, okay, well, how can we change this dynamic? So come from a place of solution focused rather than being problem focused and being challenged by that. And as you say, when you get into that headspace, and look, we're human, so we're not perfect. Deliberately, we are imperfect. Right? But the difference it makes in your business to the people that you employ, to how they solve problems for your clients, that's where we go back to exponential growth. Things happen very quickly at a hyper-accelerated pace when they're all tapping into this same, we can call it vibrational frequency, but it's just an energy. It's just a place of, well, and I said this to, I think it was our friend a couple of weeks ago. I said, but the one commonality I see between everyone who has succeeded in this space is they have this incredible sense of calm. You know, if you listen to podcasts and you listen to people like Deepak or people like Jerry Colonna, they just have this incredible sense of calm in everything they see, regardless of the situation that comes in. And I think that is the space that if you inhabit that space, and it's not woo-woo, if you're looking for wealth accumulation, you're looking for happiness, you're looking for fulfillment, you're looking to, you know, be the next big thing, if you can master that skill to have complete inner peace and calm, you'll get that, right? But it is a skill to be worked on.
Yeah, it's it is. I mean, I've heard it said basically that ultimately the limits, your abilities to succeed is, or the limit on your ability to succeed is basically the limit of your central nervous system to tolerate the conditions of success.
Wow.
And that really, if you want to increase your ability to succeed, the number one place to start working is on your own central nervous system, your own equanimity, your own emotional equilibrium, your own ability to hold space and to hold peace, even in a state of tension, because there's always tension. Yeah. And that's that. And it sounds, I got to imagine somebody who's like never operationalized any of this. And set up their first Facebook ad campaign or something. They're like, these guys are nuts or full of it. One of the two. And it's like, yeah, I mean, and if you don't take our word for it, you'll find out the hard way. Like your Facebook ad campaign, your customer acquisition cost will double overnight because of a hiccup on the platform or degraded ad performance or whatever. And you're going to find how tuned your central nervous system is. Mm-hmm. And that decision is going to become your future. Like, do you just shut off your ads because you can't take it? Or do you have the ability to go in and figure it out and optimize your campaign even while it's spending $1,000 a day or $10,000 a day or whatever campaign level you're at, while it's spending your money ineffectively and you feel like you're bleeding out, can you still perform?
Well, and that's fascinating because when I was saying that you can't sell personal development, what I mean by that is it's very difficult to sell it at profit on an ad campaign because your cost of acquisition is so high when you're just selling personal development transformation, like, isn't
right?
Because it's so intangible, and because it's so intangible, that's why the cost of book call is so high, which means that your high ticket offer has got to be so high in order to sell at a profit, which is why a friend said to me, Ed, what you do needs to be done organically with a little bit of ad spend on the top. Because when you talk in your voice with how we solve these problems, you do it across lots of videos and you throw a little bit of, in other words, so effectively it's advertorial. It's not ad. It's content, which has got ad spend behind it. Then you get your message out to the world, to those who resonate with you, and then they book calls. But if you try and force the ad spend on that, it doesn't work. But and to your point, but these people who say, well, talking about is nonsense, well, go and do that. Go and spend your first $5,000, see how many dollars you make. Now, you might make a return on your investment by shouting at the screen and forcing these vulnerable people into your program. I can't remember how many I've seen who a year, 18 months later, those programs don't exist.
Well, yeah, because nowadays you just end up with like 50 bad reviews on Trustpilot and then nobody ever buys anything from you.
Well, also they're not, the thing is, I think the other thing is not only the message is really hard, but there is no depth to what they're selling. And the thing which I find staggering, and I don't know about how you feel about this, you know, I've seen some 10, 15K high ticket programs, and it's like, I wouldn't pay $50 for those.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is nothing in there which is going to teach them. So what they're doing is they're taking corporate execs who want to leave the 9-to-5 to find, you know, to the freedom that we all want as entrepreneurs. They've got money. Right. So they're buying a really low ticket, low content program to solve a problem for them, which has got nothing in it, but it will teach them things they've never heard of. But the things which they're teaching are not worth $15,000, and they won't be able to pull the levers.
Well, yeah, and you don't, because you don't know what you don't know, you don't even have a way to evaluate the substance of the program. Like, I see it all the time. It's and it's a very, I mean, that's the biggest thing I'll say, you know, being in this space of helping people venture forth into entrepreneurship, it is a very sophisticated undertaking. Yeah. And I don't want to sound like a commercial for what we do, but like, you know, do they account for personal development? Do they account for software? Do they account for marketing and advertising skills? Do they account for copywriting? Do they account for personal branding? Do they account for business operations? Do they account for hiring? Do they account for recruiting? Do they teach you how to set up workflows and SOPs and how to run an actual successful business? Is it something that actually has a, you know, a scalable foundation of a model where it's not going to only work when it's small, but as soon as you try to get big, now the ad targeting is ineffective and you can no longer afford to acquire customers? Like, but people that are just starting out, they have no clue to ask any of these questions.
Yeah, and it's an interesting one there. So here's a question, Jeff. Like, if we think, like, I had a client doing nearly 8 figures with no SOPs. Well, they had some, but they didn't have great SOPs, and hence everything was beginning to fall to pieces. So in all of your research and data with what you've had several hundred thousand people going through your program, maybe even 7 figures now, I don't know, but how many of them want, like new entrepreneurs, want the whole suite? Because when we do startup coaching, we do an incubator, and I've done lots of those. Like, we teach them everything.
Right.
But interestingly enough, in your programs, what's the, I don't know if you want to say this, but do you know what your completion rate is in some of those modules? So when we look at it and think, we as entrepreneurs know you need all of that. Like, you cannot go into business without it. You can only get so far. But from a human perspective, how much of that do they consume?
Yeah, it's an art. I mean, we are, so yeah, I don't mind sharing some numbers. I mean, we've had, I don't know the exact number, but it's somewhere between 250 and 300,000 now students that have bought any sort of training from us at all, right? But of those, it's about 10% that have sort of made the commitment to really go seriously into building. Again, we talked about the concept of success vehicles, right?
Yeah,
we have trainings on all these different success vehicles. And so our foundation has been about 30,000 people that have, you know, come or are in our program building success vehicles over the last 5 years, almost, well, it's a little over 4 years now. And of those, you know, but what we figured out is a few things. One, we keep adding, call it different facets of the support infrastructure that we keep building out the ecosystem, because you're right, people need it all. They need software. I mean, and we have something called the Wheel of Growth where We talk about, you know, the knowledge, the requirements of knowledge. You have, you know, your kind of like tactical path specific knowledge, but you also have like strategic knowledge on how to think about business and how to process bigger strategic questions. You have like intuitive knowledge, which is more like first principles that you can use as heuristics for decision making. And then we have in you know, your whole ecosystem of your environment. That's another piece of like, we have training on like how to renegotiate relationships with your friends and family so that you can create the time and space and or reduce the toxicity in your environment so that you even have the energy to give to your business. We get into tools, and we provide our own software. We provide access to funding and capital solutions. We provide networking because strategic relationships are our resource. And like we've built, and then we have like all the personal development ground. We have the three P's: physical training, personal training, professional training, skills training. We have an orientation toward finding your purpose and faith and spirit and why you do what you do. Like, but that's where it's like, we've built out this massive ecosystem because people need all this stuff. But to your point, if you tell people on day one, it's a practical thing. It's like if you run an ad that's like, hey, want to change your life, become an entrepreneur. Entrepreneur is the English word for adventurer. Come live life as an adventure so that you don't die with regret and a bucket list full of things you never did and a family you can never afford to retire and take care of, and you end up, you know, dying at Walmart as a greeter or whatever. That's what most people are on track for now. Like, but to make this work, we're going to give you this and 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 this. And like, people click off the ad.
Yeah.
They're not paying attention anymore.
No.
Because it sounds overwhelming. And so what we've found is like, we ask people questions. Hey, do you want to solve this problem? They say yes. We go, okay, here's what you need to do, and here's how we provide you a service to support you. Mm-hmm. And then they go, awesome. That sounds amazing. Then we ask another question. Do you also want to solve this problem? Awesome. Here's what you need to do. Here's the service. Here's how we support you and provide you. And eventually, you've asked all the questions that amount to, do you want to become an entrepreneur and have a whole new life? Mm-hmm. But they said yes to it incrementally through smaller questions. Does that make sense?
And I guess, yeah. But it's also, you know, part of what is called in marketing, selling the sizzle and the steak. Like, got to give them what they're asking for, then you give them what they need.
Right? Yeah, it's hard, but here's the thing, Ed. I encourage you as a compatriot in the fight here. Like, compared to what? I mean, the world. I was putting a presentation together today that looks at people physically, personally, professionally, and purposefully. We call those the four P's.
Yeah.
Physically, I mean, this is America. America is just a total train wreck. You know, physically, 88% of Americans show at least one sign of metabolic syndrome. 60% take prescription drugs every day. 20% of GDP goes to healthcare. Like, America is a complete bottom of the swamp in terms of health. Then personally, the average marriage only lasts 8 years. 40% of people wrestle daily with anxiety and depression. I've got more personal stats. Professionally, I mentioned the gap between wage increases and inflation. People are getting poorer year after year after year. The average 65-year-old has less than $60,000 in savings. They're never going to retire. Purpose, 81% of people believe that life has a purpose, but only 6% of people actually think about the purpose of their life at least one time a year or more.
It's staggering. One of the things
The world is a sad place, man. And that's where it's like, yeah, entrepreneurship is hard, but living an average life sounds far harder to me because it's terrible.
Well, I think that if you get stuck in that corporate loop, you're not getting exposed to the things we're talking about. Having said that, the people I think I really enjoy working with as well is the young ones, because, you know, I've got clients who are 20. Mm-hmm. And are on that incredible accelerated growth journey. What they struggle with is they've got all this information being told them by, you know, 20 different gurus, and they don't know how to disseminate the information because there's so much noise out there, is what they should do in that space. But the thing is they, over time, it percolates, they refine. These kids, they're going into that journey, right? And that's what I love seeing, that, because they're beginning to understand, hold on, this is not about money. This is not about wealth. Yeah, I want to do this. I want to do this, now the other. But this is about how do we touch people's lives? Because that is the beautiful space. Yeah. And that, I think, going back to, you know, everything that we do is like, how do you fundamentally change the direction of someone's life? And the program that you have and what we do is that's what we're trying to do. We're, you know, we're doing it because there's the business strategy and there's the business tactics, but ultimately is when they understand the nature of abundance, I can have this. This dream that I have for life has always been there for me. I just didn't know how to touch it. And that's what we're teaching them, is how to touch it. Because everyone who talks about, you know, there's a secret, no one's giving you the codes to life, it's like the code. We've been doing this ever since humanity's been around. It's just that that information has been withheld from you because it doesn't serve your the people who pay your salaries, right?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That information is there for you. And if you want to go and seek it, you can have it. And then you get to have, no one's going to say you're going to have a perfect life. But the other thing about the people who want purpose, so you can sell purpose. I think, you know, definitely that is, I mean, look at Simon Sinek.
Right.
He's built an entire business on why. And I think that's one of the other questions. One of the other points is people have stopped. They haven't developed the technique to ask deep questions, to get beneath the superficial. I mean, my career started off as a barrister, which is a trial attorney in the UK, right? We used to interrogate people. That's what we do.
Right.
We extract information from people who don't want to share it. It's a skill in that. Then I became a headhunter, similar thing, where we're extracting information. We're extracting all the bad stuff they don't want to tell us, which right. We need to see whether they're going to wiggle, they're going to fit. So I've had a whole career, basically. Then you understand things like truth. That's not actually true. I don't believe that. And when you can teach people these different layers to questions, then they understand, well, hold on, if I ask that question and that question and that question, it's like a sale. So let's take sales very quickly. So the sales guy goes out to a meeting and he comes back and he goes to his boss, how did it go? I reckon I'm going to put it in Salesforce, 90% chance of securing this client, right? And then sure enough, 3 months later, the boss saying, well, what happened to that client? Well, you know, it didn't work. So, okay, well, tell me what happened. Well, I went there and they said, you know, we love what you do and we're going to buy your products. And so I walked away thinking, great. So, well, have they ever bought a product from us before? No. How do they hear about it? They met someone in a pub who said something about it. Does this person have authority or budget to actually sign off on the deal and pay for it? No. Right. So actually, all of the risk indicators in their sale is really low chance of sale, right?
Right.
Yeah, you've come back all inflated based on one question. But if you ask him 10 questions and then 10 questions go into another 10 questions, you're right. This guy might like us, but he might be 12 months away and we need to do a hell of a lot of work in order to bring him over the line. But we've got 10% chance.
Right.
Right. But it's the skills that we're talking about, that awareness of that's not what I need to know. I need to know much more than that. It's those skills which then percolate into the entrepreneurship and into the business, which gives you a much better chance of success.
Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about your Business of Life program. Is that kind of the main program that you're
Yeah, but that's the main program. Right, so, yeah. So essentially what it is helping seven and eight figure, well, it's like high six figure, seven, eight year entrepreneurs overcome these difficulties they experience in life, particularly at like the 6 to 8 year level. So they're looking for pivot, exit, and what they're experiencing is something in the business is not working as well as it did. They're not as fulfilled with the business anymore, so they want out. So what I do is I come in and we talk about all the things we've done already, which is, it's not about the business. Well, look at where the business is, but it's more about, what do you feel about the business? What are you trying to pull off? What's your mission today? You've already accomplished all of these things, but don't worry about that. Mm-hmm. And then we look at, what's your history? What are your patterns? What's your childhood? So we look at all of the determining factors which influence your success or otherwise going forward. So we unpack all of that. Then we have to create new habits and patterns, right? And then we look at the business. So now we know this. Let's take a look at the business. So we do it in tandem. And say, right, what parts of the business, what strategies aren't working, what is working? And generally, what we'd find is that It's either system-driven, it's product-driven, or it's people-driven. Mm-hmm. Like it's going to be fairly simple. It's just a question of, and then we look at leadership. Well, how are these people meant to do what you're expecting them to do when you've never communicated that to them? Oh, well, I hired them, therefore they should know that. How should they know that? Because I'm paying them $100,000, $200,000 a year. You haven't told them what you want to do in your business. You just expect them to do it. You haven't told them what role they have. You haven't given them a career. You're just fitting them in. So how do you expect buyback? Well, they should be grateful they're getting paid that amount. No, they shouldn't be grateful. Well, they will be. But the point is, that's not how you grow a business. Or, you know, it's, I don't like my customers anymore. Well, why don't you like your customers anymore? Because all I ever get is that when you get to the top of the tree, your customers only call you with complaints. So I don't like that. Right. Well, so let's get you back into the creativity, the elements of your business, which you're really good at. And let's get someone who's really good at client management to do that for you. It's,
and or then, do what I've done and go down to the summer camp and hang out with your customers.
Get back into the grassroots of what,
which is amazing, by the way. I mean, I spent in the last year, I've probably spent 100 days hanging out with my customers, and it is incredible.
Yeah, and that is transformative for you because you get to actually experience what you set up in the first place. Otherwise, you're so far removed from the business, and you know, and people step out or they don't see. They are trying to control it. So one of the issues is they try to control the narrative. So as soon as things try to break, what we do is we wrap our arms around it, and we control it. And ultimately what happens is there is no clarity, there's no opportunity, there is no abundance. So all you're doing is getting more and more anxious and overwhelmed and fearful about the state of the business because you're trying to control every element. But because your foot's been off the pedal for so long, you don't even know what's happening in it. So you have this loop of what's actually going on.
Trying to grab the reins of a horse that's already at full gallop.
Yeah. And you're the one who's sat there and watched it go from walk to gallop.
Yeah, yeah.
So we have to be accountable for that. And then, you know, some of them will actually sell their business because that's what they want to do, but they're selling it for a number they never thought possible. Because we just change a few things. We change that.
Yeah, no, as you're talking about this, I'm like, oh my gosh, when I was at the end of my rope on my last business, the one I sold, and I told you it probably cost me $10 or $20 million. I should have called, if I'd only had known you, we could have done this whole process. I probably could have taken another year or two to reorient, you know, re-engineer some of the internal elements of the business and probably captured all that value.
And then you then have lessons to accelerate the next one as well, because you've already realized how to do it. And so it comes down to people like you and I think, Jeff, you know, we want to help the world. So one of the biggest challenges has always been the people who pay my bills, the ones who have high 6, 7, 8-figure businesses, because they're the ones who pay for the time. But ultimately, we also want to share that knowledge as widely as we can, because if the mission is to build is to train entrepreneurs to build businesses that do impact our planet and people positively, we have to do that at grassroots, right? The thing is doing it at grassroots, as you've established, you've managed to pull that off, but you've got a $50, $60 million business. Trying to go to the world at the beginning is very hard to pull off because they don't, you know, A, it's low ticket. You've got to build them in there. So the way I go about that at the moment as best I can is to give them lots of content and knowledge for free, right? And then let that percolate. If they want a little bit more of me, then they can do a low ticket program and I'll turn up, you know, every week and for an hour. But otherwise, it works better when we're doing it in this environment because you can get much closer to someone in an hour than you can do when you've got 20 people on the call for an hour.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh no, with Jacqueline and I, my wife, we do these workshops that frankly we do as a passion project. They don't really even make any money, but we'll spend a week with 12 people.
That's
full,
cool.
like 12, 14 hour days.
Yeah.
Oh, with 12 people because that work is so rewarding. So, okay. Ed, on that note, you mentioned content, you mentioned knowledge that you give away. How can people go find you and find all of this value that you're giving?
The best place to go and find me is just go to my website, which is just edandrew.com, because you'll find all the links to there. You'll be able to contact me there. The links to the YouTube channel as well, which is Ed Andrew, The Business of Life. That's the best place to go and find all of that content. And to your point just now, you know, for me, what I want to be able to do is workshops and retreats with those type of people. You can do up to 20, but 12, 14 is a really good number. You go really deep into this. And do those a few times a year, and then also run big events as well, where you can do the one-to-many to get the information out there. You can't transform all those lives at the same time, but at least they begin to realize there is something better for me.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I do. That's where I'm at.
Awesome, man. EdAndrew.com, Business of Life Mastermind. Any parting thoughts before we sign off here?
Yeah, there's a phrase which I have, which is, the pain that you feel today is far greater than the pain of the change that you fear.
The pain that you feel today is far greater than the pain of the change that you fear.
Yes.
So that thing you're stopping yourself from doing that would change the pain you feel today is not going to be as painful as continuing to feel the pain.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Love it. So true.
And that's it. It's like everyone has the opportunity at any age to change the dynamic of who they are and the business they want to build. I don't believe lepers can't change their spots. I'm just not a believer of that. I've seen it change. And I just want people to know that you can lean in and tap into that any time that you want, but it takes intention and focus and action. You can read as many motivational quotes and inspirational quotes and books as you like. And one of the biggest challenges in the world that I live in and we live in, which is personal development and business strategy, is that if you go to an event with 1,000 people or 2,000 people, you're going to come out really inspired. And 3 days later, you're going to say, how do I apply that to my life? The one thing that I do, which most of those people never do, as I then show you how you do that day by day, situation by situation, because that's where the transformation occurs. If you don't have that guidance, you can't solve the problems, because we're humans. We need a sounding board to help us understand, why did I have that thought and why did I execute it that way? Now I've done that. If I stop, reflect, I can change the dynamic. So the next time I react to that, I'm going to react either neutrally or positively. And you can't do that. I don't believe you can do that by listening to books and podcasts. You can be inspired to make the change, but you can't actually make the change.
Yeah, it's like I remember our therapist teaching us about the most effective school of therapy in the world is in Milan, Italy, the Milanese school, where the therapist actually moves into your house. And it's very expensive. Only wealthy people can afford this over there. But the therapist moves in with you, follows you around, and whenever you and your wife start to get into it, the therapist is right there situationally, and they go, hold on, say what you said again, but like, you know, take a breath, pull the energy back, or try using a word substitute, like whatever it is that you're operationalizing. They're like right there to coach you in the application in the moment, because they have like in 30 days, they completely cure people of all these major neuroses that otherwise we in America, we go to therapy for 10 years, nothing changes.
And you shouldn't have to do that. You shouldn't have to go there to pay someone else to listen to you every week. It shouldn't happen. Right. So basically, transformation takes the first penny drops within the first 4 to 6 weeks, and then you're working on it forever. But I also do 1 to 7 day programs with business, go in there, deep dive, turn them around very quickly, have a look at exactly what's going on. But to that very last point, the work which I would like to do more of is where you take a business leader, business owner who is, say, going to negotiate a new contract, they're going somewhere, sit with them. You sit them, but you have the discussion. You're actually with them, observing them in the process of the negotiation or whatever the situation they're in, and coaching them as they go through that. Because that is incredibly powerful. But as you rightly say, it's an expensive process for them. However, and I had this conversation about pricing and self-worth. The ROI to change your life is immeasurable. So if people are worried about paying $10,000 or $5,000 or $20,000 or $30,000, well, think of it like this. If your business does, say, $10 million a year now, and I can help you add another 10 in the next 12, 15 months simply, we're not even changing products and services. We're just changing dynamics. Think of how incredibly that successful that is. Or you have got a $50 million business, we can put another $3 million profit in. And you get to be happy at home. You get to finally get to have a holiday and enjoy yourself. You actually can sit down and read a book without you thinking about business. That mental freedom is worth any price.
Well, you make a really interesting connection, though. Like, your price tolerance does correlate to your self-worth, because what value you place on improving your life is based on what value you place on your life in the first place.
There you go. And so people who want to pay the price don't see the ROI. So you'll often see, and I don't know how you see this, you'll often see people who have very little money paying a very high price because they see the ROI. And often you'll see people who have all the money in the world, they won't spend a dollar.
I have seen that. I've seen that. I've also seen it go the other way too.
It goes the other way as well, but it's always the direct correlation to how much they want to change and what it's worth.
Usually, in my experience, it's people that already have a lot of money. Often, I mean, maybe it's just not the right fit, which is, in which case, good. Yeah. I'm glad if they don't buy, but assuming it is and they still don't, it's usually because of ego. They think, I've made this money, I'm successful, I don't need help.
Yeah, well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because sometimes I'll talk to a client and they'll say, I don't need help in my business. It's like, why are we talking? Well, I need X, Y, and Z. Well, then you do. Because they'll say, well, I know that. I know that. And then they'll say, after a few weeks, that's really changed how I see this. Those deals which I never got, I've now got those deals. So then they begin to understand. But of course, you know, we're human. We are imperfect. So our ego is going to get challenged by someone saying to you, I don't believe you. But you've got to create, we talked about psychological safety months ago. You've got to be able to create that space for someone to tell you what is actually happening in their life. That is, I think, the greatest art of any coaching that you or I do or anyone else does. Is like the camp is a fantastic space to hold psychological safety for someone.
Yeah, it's a kid's summer camp, man. Great
interview. It's a kid's summer camp. Exactly. And everyone's got your back. Like, you need to have someone who's got your back, who's not going to judge you for what you say and do.
Well, listen, Ed, unfortunately, we are out of time. I have got to jet, and this has been everything I hoped it would be. I'm coming on your show here pretty soon, I believe.
2 weeks' time, or less, 12 days, I think. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, then we're it's not goodbye. It's just pause for now, and we're going to resume in 2 weeks.
We will indeed. It's been a great pleasure. Thanks so much, Jeff.
Likewise, Ed. I appreciate you. You've been an amazing guest. And of course, to the viewers and listeners, I'm going to tell you what I tell you every time. You're the best part of this show. You're why I do it every single day. I'm so glad we got to spend this time together. Until next time, take care.
Hey, it's Jeff here. If you liked this episode of Unlock Your Potential, it would mean so much if you would like and share the episode on whatever platform you're listening or viewing on. And if you really like what we're doing here and you enjoy this podcast, please consider leaving a review. There is so much work that goes into these episodes, and you leaving a positive review lets us know that that work is reaching people, and especially it helps us reach other people. Your review could be the reason that someone else decides to tune in, check out this podcast, and unlock their potential and ultimately level up the quality of their life. So thank you so much for your support and for listening, especially if you like or share or leave a review. Thank you for helping us spread the word, and thank you for unlocking your potential to go make the world and your world a better place.